I'm here in Racoole and I'm talking to Mary McNally. Can you tell me, your maiden name was?
Shiel.
Shiel.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Shiels.
Well, the Shiels were from Ballymount in County Wicklow. And it was a custom hundreds of years ago for them to bring their sheep and down to winter on these lower grounds here and bring them down off the mountains. And the original Shield that settled in Racoole, that is how he came down and met a young widow that had a farm here and on the estate of the Kennedys, who were from Johnstown Kennedy is the name of the estate, which is, there's a golf club there now, the house is gone and all. Anyway, he married her and settled here and had a big family. That would be about 1642.
Oh, as far back as that.
As far back as that.
My goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be five or six generations, so.
Yes. Me, my father, my grandfather, great-grandfather. My great-grandfather would have been one of that family. Yeah, that's four. So that's five generations, yeah. I suppose you'd count it.
And so that name is very relevant around here, isn't it?
Well, it hasn't. If I continue from the point of view, they were up at Cool Mine. Now, it was a big farm on the Johnstown Kennedy estate. It extended from right up where the forestry is now, mm-hmm. and right down across nearly to here, and that, and apparently was very well farmed, because if you go back to records, which I'm afraid are all gone now, but I was told of when I was young, even up there on the hills, they grew corn during the Crimean War, when you couldn't get wheat at all, and that. And it was done, you know, in the sort of system they use in China for by ridges, and grown in ridges on the hill and right down the hill.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, all the papers and everything about it were in one of the family houses. I'll come to that afterwards, Racoole House. They were destroyed. The family there weren't interested in history at all. But when she was young, my aunt in Hillview, who was history mad, she had seen them and knew the records were there of the wheat sold from Cool Mine, which is the name of the place here on the hill, Cool Mine, and the wheat sold from there during the Crimean War. And it was harvested by women workers working on ridges on that, down the hill, because the hill is very steep. If you're here in the daytime, you would see how steep it is.
Mm. Yeah. Now, the Crimean War was in the middle of in the 1840s.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was quite close to the famine. So they were growing wheat at that stage.
Yeah. Yes. At that time, I wish I had thought of photostatting it. The family were still on Cool Mine, and the main farm or most small estate of Racoole was Racoole House. Unfortunately, in 1798, the son of the house there, John Clinch, was executed. It's a very sad story. And the family who had, they were in legal business, and I don't know of any other business, on Bachelor's Walk, as well as living in Racoole, the Clinch family. And they what do you call it, just lost interest in the Rathcoole estate. My great-great-grandfather rented the land in, as well as what he was already doing, so he had an enormous spread, and that was from 1800 on, or 1801, he rented it, and the Clinches just disappeared quietly out of the area, and in 1831 he bought it from them. He bought the whole thing.
Estate.
Yeah, and it adjoined the what Cool Mine farm. Mm-hmm. But as I have said, the Cool Mine farm was rented from the Johnstown Kennedy family, and around 1870. Sir John Kennedy decided he wasn't letting them have it anymore and evicted them from it. So
why the change of heart? Was it
I think it's part of the developments at that time. It happened over on Cloncurry Estate and in various places that they thought cattle were better than people, that they could make more themselves by direct farming on a big scale than they could by doing it through tenants. Mm-hmm. And it happened all over the place.
Yes.
At that time.
And it affected your great grandfather then, was
yes,
he was evicted from his land.
That's right. And so Rathcoole House at that stage was there, and the house is still there, though it's been unoccupied now for 50 mm-hmm. years nearly. And at the present time, it's been bought by a developer who intends to revitalise the house exactly as it used to be and build his offices beside it. Well, now, the position with developers at the moment, as you probably know, is a bit dicey. I don't know whether he intends to go ahead with it or not, but I have had a lady architect who's interested in the historical type of work, and she has been with me and gone into every detail that I could remember about Rathcoole House. Mm-hmm. And that the what it calls my great grandfather, who was the one his father bought the estate in 1831 for him, and he moved in and he married twice. And his first family were grown up when he married the second time. I have boxes of mortuary cards that give the history of them, the ones from the early ones, because there were some of them up and married when he married a fairly young girl on his second occasion.
Yeah. To come closer to yourself now.
Well, that's why I was bringing it down. Yeah. We belonged to the second family, and in it there were other sons who died. But they were one daughter married over at Newbridge. But the another two did not marry, and then there was the two youngest of the family were James and Edward. James inherited the whole place. There's quite a story in between there, but he inherited the place with all the outlying. If you like to put my hand like that and say that Rathcoole House and all the immediate ground went to James, a composite place. And my grandfather, the younger son, got all the outlying bits. A piece of land here at Tooten Hill, a piece of land at Hillview, more down on the Newcastle Road, more down on the Nace Road, where you pass by when you're driving out, where Commercial Hurling Club is now. And another big tract over in Sagart beside where this Carrigmore
Why did he take it so fragmented like that? Why not all together?
It was the great grandfather trimmed the place and left a very practical composite piece to the elder of the two sons.
Oh, I see. So it was the little pieces left over then that fell to your...
Yeah, exactly.
Your father. Then. Was your grandfather.
My grandfather. And
what was your grandfather's name?
Edward.
Edward. And so Edward then managed very well, didn't he?
Well, he married... my grandmother came from the Curragh. And actually, the Standhouse pub opposite the back of the Curragh Racecourse was her home, and then owned a good lot of property there.
What was your mother's maiden, your grandmother's maiden
Dunn.
Name? Dunn.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when she married in,
yeah.
in here?
Well, my grandfather died, unfortunately, when he was only 43. Personally.
Oh, and so
the family were all
yeah.
They're a big family. Were five boys actually, though one died young. Four that left four and two daughters, and my grandmother lived on till 1924. Actually, I was a year and 10 months when she died, but I can remember her.
Do you indeed?
Yeah. I surprised my mother and my aunt one day when we were sitting in the garden in Hillview, and I said, I can remember Dad bringing me across from Lucan and being taken into the breakfast room in Hillview, and an old voice, a very shaken, deep old voice saying, is your aunt Sissy going to fix your doll, to mend your doll?
Yes.
And the two of them, Aunt Sis and Mum, looked at each other and they said, but you couldn't remember that. That's exactly what happened. But you couldn't remember it. But yes. I did.
Imagine, yes.
From yeah, it was such a year an and
early,
10 months at that
early
time.
Early age, yeah. I was going to ask you what's your furthest back memory, but that's obviously it.
That's it.
Yeah. And so...
father was the fourth... The third of five brothers. The eldest one, Uncle Jimmy, became a rate collector when he was pretty young. What I call Uncle John, the pride of the family, he became a solicitor. And he was also a county councillor and chairman of the Council of County Councils and of Dublin County Council when it was for the whole county, north and south and all.
What was his name?
John Shiel,
yes.
Yeah. And he was, his practice was on Bachelor's Walk. And then next to him came my father, who became a vet. And then Uncle Bill, who became a doctor. And Edward, who died young. That was all the boys.
Well, no, that's all in your father's side, and that's
the two sisters, Aunt Sis was the one who was an honorary librarian for Rathcoole afterwards. She ran the place. She was interested in everything that went on round about, and that and Aunt Molly just did the housekeeping.
Yes. What an interesting family.
Yeah, they were.
They
were
all got
absolutely
on so well, yeah.
devoted to other people. When Uncle Bill, the doctor one, when he was the last one to die, and at his funeral, somebody said to me, you need never pray for your Uncle Willie. He's on every prayer list in the parish.
Is that right?
No.
Yes.
And they were all like that.
They were all so got on so well.
And yep. worked for everybody else.
Now, what about your maternal side then? Your mother's side?
Well, you see, my father, as a vet, up to in 1916, he did some interesting things. There was a very famous race course that he was present at its birth, the Tetrarch. He was buying horses around the Curragh for the British Army when they were all being exported for the First World War, no tractors then. And he eventually was persuaded to go out himself to look after the horses, and that he never was a combatant, but he was, what do you call it, out with the British Army as a vet. And he was gassed. He was out after they were chasing horses or looking for invalided horses or and to put them down or bring them in if they were worth saving. And he rode into a pocket of gas himself. And
how do you mean he rode into a pocket of gas?
Well, apparently there was a hollow.
Yes.
And there was a horse lying in it.
Yes.
And he rode down into the hollow to examine the horse.
Yes.
And the gas was sort of still lying in the hollow.
Out, was it? Yeah.
He was
overcome by that.
Yeah. And from that time on, for the rest of the war, and that happened in 1916, he was only out about 6 months or so at the time. He was invalided out for a while, and he was back in again. And he was out again and back in again, and this went on. Finally, he was invalided back to Liverpool, to where one of the hospitals there had been converted for all the Irish, soldiers going home and that. And they called it the First Western General, and my mother was nursing there. And my mother was a Welsh nurse, and her family have their own very good history in North Wales. And that there's a monument to one of them outside Bangor, and anyway, he brought her home with him. They were married. He was demobbed on the 30th of June. They were married on the 2nd of July and arrived in Ireland on the 9th of July. That's fun, interesting. My mother described being met at Westland Row by two of my uncles, the two eldest ones, with a pony trap. There was no other way of getting out to Rathcoole at the time.
So they were collected. She was collected by the two.
Father, and coming through the devastation that was in 1919 in Dublin.
Oh, we're right in the middle of the War of Independence. Yeah.
The buildings in O'Connell Street and everywhere had all been smashed up.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So the destructed, the buildings. But what, tell me about Rathcoole. What was there trouble here during the fight for freedom, the War of Independence?
No, but not particularly. Then, as far
your
as
your uncles or your father had they any? Were they involved in any way?
No, they weren't involved. They were very much in sympathy with what was going on, and actually a first cousin of my father's, the aunt that got married and left, Aunt Frances, she was married in Newbridge at Rickardstown, and her only son, John Sheil O'Grady, who was a great historian as well, he was the first magistrate in Ireland to resign as a protest against the execution of the leaders in 1916.
My goodness, and he was
he'd be first cousin of my father's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but a good deal older than my father. And I can remember him. He died just before my father. We used to go to Rickardstown to his farm very often on Sundays, because it was a stud farm, and my father, who was absolutely horse crazy, was very involved with him in the breeding of the horses.
What was his name again?
My father. John Sheil O'Grady.
John Sheil O'Grady, yeah.
Yeah.
And so This is extraordinary, you know, to have so many connections and so many important places and in times of history. What about your own, coming to yourself? You went to school here in Racoole, did
I
you?
did not. What he called, when my father and mother were married, they rented a house down at Lucan at first, and then they bought Somerton, famous in modern history by Liam Lawler, and that. And they were there for a short time. Well, I suppose 5 years or so. I was born while they were, and so was my elder brother, while they were renting a house before they moved into Somerton. My grandmother had guaranteed my father for to get a loan to buy Somerton,
Oh, yes.
and the rest of the family kicked up when she died and forced him into selling it. We moved up to where there were there was a whole estate belonging to Lord Cloncurry being developed for ex-servicemen. My father was supposed to get, because he was an officer, he was to get a bigger house than any of the others and that. And then one of the men who had got one of the smaller houses backed out, and the Land Commission man in charge of the development said to my father, "If we extended that house for you and gave you the extra land, would you like that?" And my father agreed, and we lived up there. And it was a very sad place afterwards. My father, we moved into it in 1920, at the end of 1926. And my father died in January 1930.
Oh, he didn't get much of a chance to live there
No,
yet.
no. Of course, his practice was all over the place. He had a brilliant practice. He was the county veterinary officer for the South County Dublin, what they call the Selbridge Number 2 area. And of course, he had a pension from the British Army because, he was getting worse and worse with the gassing every year. He was dying on his feet. But to go back to the school thing, we were up there at Castlewarden, and in Somerton before we left there, a junior teacher from the convent school in Lucan used to come up to teach us every day for a couple of hours. What age would I have been? 2.5 to 3 or something. But Edmund, my elder brother, was just coming 5, and it was, had to go to school, and John was only a baby. For the time we were in Lucan, but we also shared lessons with Patricia Fitzmaurice. Now, did you hear the name Fitzmaurice before?
I did, yeah, that's a Kerry
Yeah, but
name.
well, he wasn't a Kerry man, he was an airman. He was the one that went with the two Germans to America
Oh,
on
yes,
the
the
first
first flight,
flight.
of course,
Yeah,
yeah,
and
here in
he was in
Baldonnel, of course.
Baldonnel. My father and he were friends, and Pat, his daughter, the only child they had, shared lessons with us. She used to be brought down from the camp every morning, and either somebody would come for her, or my father would leave her back. And that there were telephones even in those days. Pat shared our lessons. Well, then when they sold Somerton and moved up, we lost Pat for a while. It was arranged that one of the teachers in the Artlock School, which was nearly 4 miles away, came after school hours and taught us.
Yeah, but go back to the first flight again. Were you present? Were you there? Did you?
We were lifted up into, Pat and I were lifted into the plane to see it. And there was a big occasion, the day before the flight. The half the world was there, of course. And the two of us, Edmund climbed up into it himself.
And did you get special permission now because your father was a good friend?
Fitz himself and my father were with us, you know, because what I was going to say was, Pat, when she put her head in and that, she said, what are they going to eat? And one of the soldiers said, chocolate. And where is it, she said. And her father, who was just behind her, said, where you won't get it.
Oh, isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah.
And had you, what age were you then?
When the time of the flight, I suppose I was five.
Yeah, and so you had no real idea that you, I suppose, you didn't know what was going on. Or did you? Had you a good
we
idea?
We did. My father was brilliant. He, God help him, he knew he was dying. But he took us with him. That's why the teacher came. After school hours, when she finished teaching in Artlock, she came on her bike and came over to Castle Warden to teach us. But in the meantime, during the day, if he could, my father took us with him, Edmund and me especially, and everywhere he went, he would stop and tell us the history of the place we were in and that. He never left it. I can remember particularly him up at Kilteel, where the you know, there's an old castle up there, you know, and beyond it, there's another hill, and him taking us up onto the top of that hill, putting the two of us standing on the, a ditch bank. And saying, you can see 15 counties from here. And he must have picked a very clear day. And he was able to point out different landmarks, hills and everything in the distance. And point out, well, we were in Dublin. Kildare was just beside us. Wicklow was just beside us. And then he was able to point out something in Wexford, something in Waterford, and then in Tipperary, Laois, Offaly, and way over to Galway, and up to the Quilcas in Cavan, and up to the Morden Mountains in County Down.
Wasn't that a great way, though, to
he was
to
wonderful.
Learn the geography of the countryside?
He was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so having that great background, because your father obviously gave you, instilled in you the love for history and...
Oh, he had that. In that. And then, of course, his death left us in an extraordinary position. My mother, a stranger, a nurse who had never had anything to do with farming, a town person, and all she had then, you see, his pension stopped, his appointment as county veterinary officer stopped, and of course his private practice was gone as well.
And did she get any subsistence at all?
None whatever.
What kind of... So she had very little to rarely on.
But we had started school. Edmund and I had started school just 12 months before my father died in Naas. Me in the convent and him and the Christian Brothers. And we went on the bus from Blackchurch and tuppence each way. The neighbours said that they were like step-parents sending two little children off on a journey like that. But and of course the local teachers thought it was terrible, you know, that we should give an example and come to the local school. But the toilets and washing facilities and all in the schools around here were non-existent, and my father and mother weren't having any of it, and that's how we were sent to Naas.
But it must have, yes, and it was
exactly
on the bus,
a year before he died.
Was it? Yeah. Now, what, you know, I suppose when you finished with school, did you go into second level then?
I was in Naas, and of course, as I said, money was desperately scarce. Edmund went on in the Christian Brothers in Naas, because they had a secondary attached. And because he was born in 1920, before the treaty, the British government paid so much a year for him, every year. But they wouldn't have anything to do with John or me because we were born after the treaty. Me by a few days, because I was born 25th of March, and I think the treaty was 21st of March or something.
His fees
were paid.
Yes.
And something towards his bus fare, yes. But nothing for John or me at all.
Yeah.
And but in 1935, one wonderful nun in Nace said to me, I mean, I never saw a little girl from the time I left school in Nace until I came back the next morning. There was boys they had that I had no one to play with at all. But anyway, Sister Brendan called me aside one day, and I don't know whether she'd had a conversation with my mother, she must have had, and she said, "Tell me this, do you want to be a maidservant all your life?" And I said, "No, sister." And she said, "Well, that's what you will be if you don't get down to work." And from that day, she took me at lunchtime, after school, and on Saturdays, and she drilled me. And that was early in January. There was an Easter scholarship in those days for secondary school, where we lived at Castle Warden was in County Dublin, and in Kildare, part of the farm was in Kildare and part in County Dublin, but the house and all was in County Dublin, and rates were paid there, so I was eligible to go do the County Dublin scholarship, where there was no scholarship in Kildare at all, and I got it, and that. When I was 13.
That, wasn't that wonderful? That gave you a great opportunity then.
Yeah. So that's when I was sent up to Kilcullen.
Yeah.
It was a Class A Irish speaking school and all the rest of it, you know.
Yes.
And I spent 4 years there. I'm not going to go into that because there weren't very happy ones. And the culmination of what I wouldn't call exactly a feud, but a colossal animosity between the headmistress and me. I came home Christmas 1938 and went into Nace to see one of my original school friends there, and she was had gone away to Mount Melick to school, but there was no secondary in Nace at the time for girls. Anyway, Josephine said to me, "There's nothing for it, Mary. You'll have to do the civil service exams. You can't hope to go to university or anything with what's going on and that." So she got me papers and everything that I needed. And when April came, I did the writing assistance exam. I finished my leaving cert, which I did in fifth year, by the way. I didn't wait for sixth year. And I finished that on the 20th of June. And by the 18th of July, I was working in Dublin Castle.
And what was your position in Dublin? Writing assistant.
Yeah.
My goodness.
No. That was the start of my career. I ended up eventually, after a long time, as a court registrar, and that's what I retired from in the circuit court.
Tell me about the connection your father had and your uncle had with Terenure College.
They started school in the Carmelite school, which was in Clondalkin at that time, the Monastery Bank, as it's called now, but when grandfather died, by that time grandmother's brother, who was a Carmelite, was moving to Terenure, and he got special terms for the boys in Terenure because they were orphaned, and
there were orphan boys in there.
Well, yeah. What do you call them? Grandfather had died, you see.
Oh yes.
And grandmother was.
Oh yeah. So all right. So they were put in there.
Yeah, and they were taken from Clondalkin and put into Terenure, and they all went on in Terenure then, and then to jump a long way ahead, when Edmund, as I said. British took some interest in his affairs, but and it wasn't good for him at all. In a way, he didn't work as hard. But John, who was 2 years younger than me, he got the county scholarship as well as me, and he went to Terenure.
Oh, no, that's very interesting. Listen, we're going to continue with this conversation. I mean, I'm calling this part one because I want to find out a lot more about what went on in Dublin Castle when you were in there in the late 40s, I suppose, and 50s.
From 1939 on, July 1939, I was there when war was declared.
Well, now, that would be a most interesting story to hear.
Well, I don't know about that, seen from the bottom up.
Thanks very much, Mary.
If you're off the thing now, it's off. I was going to tell you the